The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
All right, launching hour two here, it is Matt Dunn in for Randy Corcoran here this morning, Saturday morning, September 25th, 2021. And I'll tell you what, yeah, we're going to be picking up that conversation, that last one we were having, kind of where we left off, but we have a big honor here. We have a chance to say a little hello to a fellow named Kyle Mills, the author of the Vince Flynn or the Mitch Rapp adventure thriller novel series, and a brand new book has come out. It's called Enemy at the Gates. And I had that thing read about, finished about 3 days after it was released. And I believe it was released on the 14th. And I'll tell you what, I enjoyed that book just thoroughly. I enjoyed every moment of reading that book. And here we have the author of it. I believe it's on the top of the charts, by the way, if you go look at some of the lists. And Kyle Mills, glad you could join us. And are you calling from Spain? Is that rumor true? Are you in España right now?
I am indeed, yes.
Okay. Well, can I ask what part of Spain? North, south, central?
Kind of in the south. Yeah, kind of in a town called Granada.
Okay, yes.
In the mountains in the south.
Okay, right on. My wife used to live in Spain for a little while. I've been there a time or two myself, and my Spanish is getting maybe a little bit rusty, but are you also a Spanish speaker? Is that something that's happening as you live out there?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying. It's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, but I'm slowly getting there.
Well, you definitely have the gift for language. And I guess I just, you know, I mean, here you've written now, is this your seventh book in which you inhabit the character of Mitch Rapp? Is this number seven?
Yeah, it is in this series. Yeah, number seven in the series and number 21 for me, which is hard to believe.
Okay, well, congratulations to you on how well it's being received and how it's sitting right up there on the top of the charts. That's got to be quite gratifying to you. And I thought, you know, if we have a chance to visit about, you know, how you write these things and how you carry the torch for Vince Flynn, that I believe most of our listeners are aware of this series. But just so we get a chance to visit a second about the new book, Enemy at the Gates, could you just offer just a little insight or a little view of what is this new book? What is this new book about?
Yeah, so with Mitch, I like to throw new challenges at him because he's such, I don't know, a rich character to me. We've known him, you know, over the course of the series since he was in college, and I always like to see how he reacts to things. So he's always had presidents who liked him and admired him, and I wanted to change the presidency and give him one that really didn't like him and is suspicious of him and jealous of him, and see how we deal with it. And, you know, we have a lot of changes in the world, a lot of changes in the threats that are facing America, and see what he'd do to find a new place in that world.
Yeah. And yeah, President Cook, if I remember the name properly, definitely is a different kind of president than Mitch Rapp, has ever had to deal with before. And the first trillionaire in the world is a character in the book. I believe, was it Nicholas Ward is the name of that character?
Yep, Nicholas Ward, the richest man in the world.
Richest man in the world gets involved in this plot here, and there is a potential for, you know, a scientist developing a vaccine for coronavirus, for all coronaviruses, you know, for the whole spectrum of coronaviruses. And obviously you'd say that that's somewhat of a topical issue. Was that part of your thinking in the direction you took this novel?
Strangely, it's kind of not. So the rap verse, as I call it, is something that runs parallel to the real universe. And a couple of books ago, this is before the pandemic, I had written about terrorists trying to use a coronavirus as a bioweapon. And, you know, it was very similar to what we have. It was a bat-borne coronavirus, but instead of out of China, it came out of Yemen. And
was that Lethal Agent?
It was.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, great
so
one there.
That's really where that came from. Like, it's not a parallel universe. Like, there hasn't been a coronavirus pandemic in the rap verse. So when I was talking about the coronaviruses and the research into it, you'll notice that the guy's thinking about the people and what happened in Lethal Agent, not about a general pandemic like we've had.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, it just occurs to me for that maybe occasional listener out there that's not quite familiar with Vince Flynn or the name Mitch Rapp. Here we are talking to the author of the books. What an honor. But could you just give a little, you know, for newbies to this world, who is Mitch Rapp and what is his history as created by Vince Flynn?
Yeah, Mitch Rapp is the CIA's top operative. His primary job is killing terrorists, typically Islamic terrorists. He spent a lot of time in the Middle East, you know, speaks Arabic fluently, and has really learned to move in that part of the world. And it's a very long series. So it's really interesting because it's 20 books now, I think. So it starts when Mitch is in college, like just graduating from college, and goes to now, which he's in his mid-40s. So if you go back and read the series, particularly if you read it in order, you have this incredible universe that's created over these 20 books and over the course of 20 years of a character that you've come to know really well through his adventures and his relationships. And it's really interesting to have such a long and, you know, beautifully written, you know, the way Vince started it and progressed it, character.
Right on. And by the way, this has been a burning question in my mind that I've tried to look into, but apparently Vince Flynn lived for quite a while in Colorado. He was a Colorado resident for some time, and I think that's where kind of he wrote his first book, maybe his second and third books even. Do you have, I know you and Vince Flynn maybe never really got to meet, and he passed away very young, I believe at the age of 47. But do you have any awareness of where in Colorado Vince Flynn lived and what he was doing here? Okay.
I don't know. No, I remember hearing the stories of him. I talked, one of his best friends was telling the story about how he had found an old door, and that was what he used for his death, this old door that was propped up on stuff. And that's how he wrote his first book. But no, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just from north of there, actually. I live in Spain now, but I'm from Wyoming.
So, oh, you're a neighbor. You're a Wyoming guy. That's right.
Yeah.
And I believe, is it Jackson Hole?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And you have a background as a climber, if I'm not mistaken there. Are you a, you know, mountain climber, yep, technical climber?
Yeah, rock. Definitely not mountains. I don't like the cold that much.
Okay. well, yeah, Wyoming, good place to live if you don't like the cold, right? Maybe that's where the Spain thing comes in, is that?
You know, every other year, yeah. We spend every other year here in Spain, and yeah, you don't have to deal with the cold.
And when you say rock climbing, is that does that mean the technical stuff, the ropes, and the whole deal?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Right on. Well, okay. That's something I've done a fair amount of, you know, we're a big 14er guy here. I've climbed probably getting around to 2/3 of them here in the state of Colorado.
Oh, nice.
And
nice.
But have you ever come down to Colorado and done, you know, climbed up a few mountains here, or is it, you know? Is that your thing at all?
I've done rock climbing in Colorado, but yeah, mountains. You know, I climbed the Grand Teton because it's right outside my door, basically. But that was enough of that, as far as I was concerned. My idea of a good day of climbing is, you know, a beach in Thailand, some nice cliffs, an umbrella drink. You know, that's that all that wind and snow and all that. I don't need that.
Okay, well, but sounds like you. you know, a thing or two about adrenaline. I mean, that if you climb the Grand Teton, holy cow. I've got some books on that that map the different routes on it and so forth. I mean, that's no easy climb. That's no slouch.
It's a really beautiful climb. I mean, I have to admit, I did enjoy it, and it's great views and everything like that. But it's a long day.
yeah, totally. And I would think, with the amount of adrenaline that gets going in the Vince Flynn orbit here and the Mitch Rapp orbit, that you knowing something about that is maybe gives you a competitive advantage. But I'll tell you what, in Enemy at the Gates, it's there's settings in Uganda, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, some of these places, some of these locations. Are these things that, you know, you do a great deal of research into as you develop these thrillers?
Yeah, you know, I like to, if at all possible, write about places that I've been, or better yet, even be there while I'm writing those scenes. And I spent some time living in South Africa, so I'm really familiar. I used to bike a lot around where Mitch lives there. So it was kind of a weird situation with COVID because you couldn't travel. So I had to pick a setting that I knew really well and that I could do by memory. So somewhere that I had lived previously. And that one fit in really well because Mitch's girlfriend has a house there. And so I thought it kind of worked as a sort of an obvious thing. Because as this president rises up and, you know, Mitch and he do not get along at all, Mitch is thinking, you know, maybe it'd be good to sort of get out of Dodge for a little while and, you know, kind of let our relationship cool off. And you can't get much farther than Africa.
Exactly. And Mitch Rapp is in his mid-40s. You know, he's had all kinds of hair-raising adventures all over the world. And I mean, maybe, he's thinking about, he's got the lovely, beautiful girlfriend, and maybe he could kind of settle into a life of ease, and he could step out of some of the danger that, you know, he's become accustomed to. But he seems to get drawn back in somehow, Kyle Mills. It's he's not quite ready to hang it up, apparently, huh?
Nobody will let him. That's for sure. Because he thought, well, I'll just back away from this a little while, see if things cool off, maybe go do some contracts with friends, you know, that I've worked with in the past and all that. And then, Irene Kennedy, the director of the CIA, who's the one who recruited him when he was in college, comes back and needs him to do her a favor. And he doesn't really want to, but you know, he can't say no to her because of everything she's done for him over the years. So that's how he gets sort of sucked into working with this guy who's the world's first trillionaire and lives part of the time in Uganda where they're doing research. But a lot of people are after him. You know, it's not – that puts a big target on your back, you know, if you're that wealthy, that powerful, and you have a lot of plans for, you know, making changes to the world, you know, with regard to medicine, with regard to power generation. You've got a whole power structure in the world of people who, you know, have done well on the playing field that he's trying to change, and they don't want it changed. So definitely in need of Mitch to watch his back.
Was that first trillionaire character, was that based or inspired by anybody? I mean, we do have an individual or two who conceivably could hit the $1 trillion in wealth mark if things keep going for them and they stick around long enough. But anybody you had in mind for that, or just, you know, somebody you created out of whole cloth?
It's kind of a composite, you know, because he's very technological. So, you know, certainly Bill Gates comes to mind there, Elon Musk, you know, the incredible wealth, maybe Jeff Bezos too, and efficiency. And then, you know, the altruism to some extent, you know, Bill Gates, as well as the interesting thing of watching Bill Gates is it is a guy who seems to really want to help the world. I mean, he's not trying to make money anymore. And there's been a lot of pushback against him, which is kind of interesting. So, you know, there's That's another thing that Nicholas Ward needs Mitch for, is because Mitch has a little bit of a, he's developed a bit of a dark, you know, view of humanity. And he tells him, you know, it's not that easy to help people because, or to save people, because sometimes they don't want to be saved. And so philosophically, they're an interesting pair.
And you would say that by the time you become a multi-billionaire, or even, you know, reach the trillionaire type status, there's kind of no way that you can't be involved in politics. Would you almost say that, that somehow or another you will get roped into a whole bunch of stuff, even if you were trying to live somewhat quietly, which Nicholas Ward is not? But, you know, you can't escape the attention of the politicians and so forth, and, you know, the entire world, right?
No, it's impossible. I mean, you just become too powerful, and you need governments to help you, to facilitate your business, to, you know, help you with disputes that you might have with another country. You know, I knew a guy who was a billionaire, and he, it's kind of interesting because you don't think about the fact that he has to call the president of the United States, you know, on a fairly regular basis, maybe because, you know, another country is coming down on him and he needs that influence and all these things. But, you know, he's got 100,000 employees or something. And, you know, that interests politicians.
It does.
Sure. So it becomes very integrated. And that's another part of this story, is that you've got a ruling class of very wealthy people and politicians that are rising up and are kind of living a little bit above the law and, you know, a little less loyal to their country. It's more of a world thing. And I'm interested in that phenomenon.
Fascinating. The ruling class is a concept we do enunciate a lot around here. And in fact, I don't know, that word was popularized, the ruling class concept, by a philosopher named Angelo Codevilla, who actually passed away last week in an automobile accident. He was getting up there in years a little bit. But his book on the ruling class is one, and I did some, I studied with him out in Claremont, California a bit, and interviewed him multiple times over the years. And I don't know if you've ever come across that name, Angelo Codevilla, but his book on the ruling class is absolutely fascinating, and one that has been somewhat integral to my view. And I enjoyed, yeah, seeing that come up in Enemy at the Gate. Some of those concepts are woven into the plotting there. But is that a name you recognize?
No. I just wrote that down. I wrote the name of the book down, because that does sound really interesting.
Right.
Because it's something I think that's definitely happening. And, you know, it's funny. I live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I moved there many, many decades ago. And as kind of a climbing bum, and now it's become the wealthiest county in America, which I would have not seen coming. And I live part-time in Spain, so I know a lot of people here who have Spanish residency. I mean, I do, but aren't from here, and they bounce around from country to country. And I think it's a very interesting group of people. Not necessarily a malignant group of people always, but people that are difficult, I don't know, like difficult to control. They're their own group. It's almost like they're becoming their own country, and they don't really have a lot of oversight from any one country or any one group.
So, yeah, fascinating.
It's
yes.
Something people should pay attention to, I think, particularly in America, where I think it's really rising up.
Yeah, and in terms of how does it affect your rootedness to the soil, maybe of the country that you know you come out of, and obviously that makes for an interesting relation with somebody like Mitch Rapp, who you know you don't get more patriotic, you don't get more pro America than that guy, right? And that's
no, definitely not.
And so how would he deal with, ruling class type members who, you know, might, you know, be in the billionaire category? And, you know, what is their attachment to the United States of America? And that's, again, something explored here by Kyle Mills in his new thriller just came out called Enemy at the Gates. And we're talking, we've got Kyle Mills in Spain. In España here. And so this could be one of the longer distance conversations we've had on this program. And I'll tell you what, we're coming into our first commercial break. And I have a whole bunch of questions and topics I'd like to explore with you, Kyle Mills, when we come back. But if you could just hang on a minute, it's Matt Dunn. I'm in for Randy Corcoran this morning, and we'll be back in a flash. Okay, welcome back. Matt Dunn in for Randy Corcoran. And hey, big honor talking to Kyle Mills, the author of the latest Vince Flynn inspired thriller called Enemy at the Gate, sitting on top of the charts right now, and it's just great to see it. And I'll tell you what, we're talking to Kyle Mills, who's in Spain, and I happen to remember last time I was in Spain, I happened to be up in the northern region, and I'm in a hotel, and I'm watching, you turn on the television, and Rambo, of all things, the Sylvester Stallone Rambo movie's on, and guess what? It's dubbed into Basque. And so I sat there and watched like an hour of Rambo in Basque, Kyle Mills. I think that was a rather surreal experience.
Yeah, that's a strange language.
Yeah, a lot of syllables and all that. And by the way, there's no shortage of climbing to be done in Spain. I don't know if you've availed yourself of that. I was just happened to read a bit about Wim Hof, who's like the deep breathing guy, and dunk yourself in the cold water. Have you ever heard of him? But he apparently used to be a climbing guide in Spain. And,
oh, really?
I don't recall what region. But anyway, but Spain has got no shortage of that. Have you done some of that in Spain?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I would say Spain is second to none. Yeah, as far as rock climbing goes. It's incredible. There are a lot of climbers that move here because you can live in these little villages in the mountains with amazing climbing, and you can buy a house for like $1,000.
Hmm. Huh, that's kind of enticing there, Kyle.
Yeah.
Mills. And you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, and I want to maybe try to explore a little bit about, you know, your evolution as a writer and how you inhabit the characters of Mitch Rapp and, you know, Irene Kennedy. And again, you are on your seventh book, and I have enjoyed every single, the only one I have not read, Enemy at the Gates, yet. Okay. So I have one little vacancy there that I'll be addressing here in short order. But there's always kind of a tension between the elected politicians and sort of the lifelong, would you call them civil servants, or the people that have spent careers in the CIA and the FBI and so forth. And Mitch Rapp seems to not have a great deal of respect for the politicians who seem to always be, you know, grandstanding or always have their agenda, and they kind of come and go. Do they necessarily put America's interests at heart? And But you know, sometimes I worry that some of the lifelong people in the government system sometimes can go a little bit wayward and maybe grab a little bit more power than they're entitled to, in terms of, you know, they're not the elected ones, right? But how do you deal with that kind of tension in your writing?
It is a really interesting thing because, I mean, there's always that push-pull between, you know, Mitch Rapp is not an elected official, and he might despise these politicians, but they are elected. And so he struggles with that. And actually, in the book I'm writing now, which is the next book in the storyline, he and Irene are really struggling with that because they have this president who's terrible. I mean, he's really bad for America. He's concerned only with his own power and growing it. And yet, you know, what can they really do? Because, you know, that's the way democracy works. You don't always get the guy or the woman that you want, right? I mean, when the other people, sometimes, you know, it's the you win some, you lose some. So they do grapple with that all the time. And I think right now you've got a phase in Mitch's career and his life that he's probably grappling with that more than he has in the past. And I honestly don't know what conclusion he's going to come to yet.
And you mentioned the character of Irene Kennedy, who is the longtime CIA director. I think in the early books with Vince Flynn, she started out as a deputy or something, and then she finds her way to the top of the CIA. But, you know, she is a very well-written character, okay? And I really salute you for how you write her her character in, and, you know, her dialogue. And just as a writer, when you write what, you know, Mitch Rapp is saying, obviously it's more, you know, male and kind of high testosterone type writing. And what's it like to write, you know, a female voice from your perspective?
Yeah, for me, you have to kind of inhabit those characters. I don't really think about what people are going to do or say in my books. I try to become them and then just write down what they do. And so they surprise me sometimes, you know, and I'll have to shift the way the book is going because, you know, I didn't know that character was going to do that. And Irene is, you know, a little bit the yin to Mitch's yang. She's very quiet, very cerebral, and is always thinking five steps ahead.
Yes.
Whereas he's much more, you know, physical, and his idea is I'm always going to, you know, the quickest way to solve a problem is if I kill that guy, then he won't be my problem anymore. And he's not coming back. So there's a little bit of tension between them sometimes. They always want to get to the same place, but she tends to want to do it by breaking a fewer dishes.
Yeah, I think that's that makes sense, what you're saying there. That's very, very much the way things seem to play out. And that tension is quite exciting, I have to say. And just so our listeners might know, that, like we've said, this is your seventh book in the Mitch Rapp universe, and there's 20 books total. And apparently there's been 75 million books sold in this world. I mean, that is a gigantic bunch of sales there, I tell you. That's got to be, you know, somewhat daunting, you know, to inherit that mantle, to carry that torch. But how did that come about? I mean, how were you selected? Did you put your name forward? Was it somewhat reluctant, or how did that all play out?
You know, I had written a couple of books for Robert Ludlum, the Robert Ludlum Estate. And so, you know, I think that was attractive, and that I had shown that I could write sort of in a different style. But I had finished the Ludlum stuff, the Ludlum arc, and I was going to go back to my own stuff that I had wanted to do and that had been kind of sitting around in a drawer. And Vince passed away, and I remember my wife calling me at home and telling me about that he had passed away, and I'd known he was sick, but I didn't realize that he was, you know, that ill. And I think, you know, it wasn't too long that I thought, wow, I wonder what they're going to do with that character, because, you know, The Survivor, which I had read just as a fan, it was his last book, or I'm sorry, The Last Man, The Survivor is the one I wrote. I don't think of these books as individual books. I think of them as one long arc. So I get confused one book to another. But I thought, you know, my hope is that he had partially finished book, or was almost finished a book or something, or that someone would take up and at least do one more to finish the character. I mean, even if Mitch Rapp died or, you know, quit or say, you know, something, just so it would end, you know, not just be hanging there. And not long after that, I got a call and asking if I wanted, would consider doing it. So, yeah, I mean, it was really stressful. That's a character that people know really well.
Yeah.
And have a lot
Iconic.
Of fans have a lot of ownership. Yeah. And people have a lot of ownership. They know who Mitch Rapp is. You know, Mitch Rapp's been a friend of theirs since, you know, for 20 years. And so you really had to get it right. So I actually thought about it for a long time. I told them I was going to have to go back and reread The Survivor and look at, you know, some of the other books in the series that I had and decide whether I thought I could do a credible job, because Vince and I didn't really write anything alike. So, you know, I didn't want to take it on if I didn't think, you know, fans would like it. So I decided I thought I could and wrote The Survivor. But, boy, I think that was one of the most stressful times in my life, is when The Survivor came out. Not having any idea whether, I mean, if you take Amazon as a good picture of what fans think, you know, that I mean, I could have gotten 5,000 one-star reviews or 5,000 five-star reviews. I had no idea what the reaction would be.
Well, I can only imagine the pressure. I mean, you're sitting there. I don't know if you were writing on a door turned horizontal, but that must have been pressure, man. I mean, that must have been something. but you've got to be quite gratified. Yeah. I mean, you are very, very well received. That's got to be, you know, a source of pride for you. I mean, as a writer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, gratifying also because, like I said, I'd been a fan of the series forever, and I didn't want to be the one that screwed it up. You know, I mean, no terrorist has ever been able to kill Mitch Rapp, but I could, you know, if I really did a bad job. So, to have that, like, wave come in after the Survivor went out of emails and reviews and people – just tell me how much they loved the book, how much they loved Vince and were happy his legacy was going to continue and how happy they were that, you know, they have lost this character that was really important to them.
Right on. And I want to, you know, when we come back from a break, I want to ask you about, you know, how did you even become a writer? And I think if I'm not mistaken, you left the banking world to enter the writing world, but I keep having text to studio come in of listeners who have questions for you. Maybe just somewhat briefly, if you could answer, maybe what did you think about the one movie that was made of the Mitch Rapp character? I believe that was called American Assassin, and I think Michael Keaton was in it. And are there any more movies in the future that are slated for the Mitch Rapp character? Can you give any details on that?
Yeah, I really loved the movie. I thought the actors did an amazing job. You know, you knew Keaton was going to be good, but Dylan O'Brien was a young guy who I only knew from The Maze Runner. He did. I mean, that's exactly how I pictured Mitch at that age, like in his early 20s, you know. And so I thought it was really cool. And as far as more, hopefully there will be. Hollywood's been a little difficult to deal with during the pandemic.
Yes,
they
I can imagine.
Been, you know, signing a lot of new stuff. So maybe more movies or maybe, you know, a series would be really fun, too, because there's like a Netflix series or something, because there's so much there. You know, you could arc, you know, do that whole life of his. It'd be great to see Dylan take that on now and have it go until he's in his 40s, like Mitch is.
Right. He's kind of arrested there in his 40s. Right. He might not ever make it to 50, you think?
He may not. You know, Vince aged him realistically. Every year, Mitch got older, a year older, but I don't do that.
Hey, I wish we could all do that, you know? That would be okay with me if we could all make that decision. Well, I'll tell you what. Hey, one more segment ahead, and I've got I hope we can cover all of my material here, but we're talking to Kyle Mills, who is got a brand new book out called Enemy at the Gates, which I read right after it came out and enjoyed it a great deal. And I do recommend the thriller genre to our listeners in the sense that it gets you thinking about current politics, geopolitics, and, you know, you get to learn a bit about some different geographies where action is happening. And I think it's, you know, obviously very entertaining as well. And anyway, we're visiting with Kyle Mills. It's Matt Dunn. I am in for Randy Corcoran. We'll be back after this. All right. Welcome back. Matt Dunn in for Randy Corcoran. Don't forget, 7:10 KNUS Cigar Night with Dennis Prager is this Thursday night, September 30th, under the stars at the View House in Centennial. I'll tell you what, exclusive for KNUS listeners. And you can get information on this, 710knus.com. The great Dennis Prager, who, yes, he's a very tall dude. I've met him several times, and he's taller than even you would think when you listen to his wonderful program. He's coming to town to hang out with us, okay? And that is Thursday, coming right on up. And we are visiting with Kyle Mills, author of the Vince Flynn inspired Mitch Rapp series. The 20th book has just come out, Enemy at the Gates, and I just plowed right on through it. I highly recommend it. Recommend you consider dipping through the series, the last 7 books, of course, and then the first 13. And the Genesis story comes out in the Vince Flynn written American Assassin, and I believe Killshot is the follow up to all of that. And you're in Spain, Kyle Mills. Are you under lockdown right now, or are you kind of breathing freely and traveling freely right now?
No, we're in good shape. There was a lockdown early, but we have probably creeping up on 80% vaccination here, so everything's open and going well.
So you're free to move about the cabin. Okay, that's good. I mean, it looks like Australia is a little different story right now. But,
yeah. You
know, as far as, you know, how did you get involved in, you know, being a writer? I believe you were in the banking world. And how did this whole writing thing happen? I guess we don't have a whole lot of time to go into it. But what prompted the writer in you?
Well, yeah, I did. I was a commercial lender and I spent, you know, my days doing that. And then I was a rock climber. And those are basically the two things I did in my life. And I kind of wanted to do something creative. And I couldn't figure out what, but I decided I was going to build furniture, and my wife really didn't want me to fill the garage for tools. So she actually is the one that said, why don't you just write a novel? And I don't know, I'd never done any creative writing before, but you know, the truth is I wasn't very handy. So the furniture thing probably wasn't going to work out. And I thought, yeah, it'd be fun to try it. You know, it's not something anybody would probably ever read, but it'd be an interesting thing to learn how to do and see how I did with it. And so that is kind of how it started. I mean, it was a little bit of a lark and I wrote a book and, you know, I passed it around to a few people and people really liked it. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I could get it published. And that was really a heartbreaking thing to do, but eventually it did get published and it became a national bestseller. And I signed a 2-book deal, which was weird because I didn't really ever plan on writing a second book, but yeah, that was like 20 books ago.
20 books ago and going strong right now, even, you know, hanging out off there in Spain. And, you know, the thriller genre, I guess it seems like, you know, you write more character-driven stories, which fits with sort of what was set up, teed up for you with Mitch Rapp. But in terms of the plotting, what's it like to, you know, I mean, you start your plot and then, you know, you got to do 300 pages or so of plotting. How do you devise all that and keep it all straight in your head and add one thing to the next thing and to the next thing? What are just some of the mechanics of how that's done?
Yeah, I mean, like for me, everybody does it differently. Like Vince wrote books really differently than I do. But for me, it's coming up with a central concept. Like, this one's a little more complicated, but the like total power of my last book was what if, you know, a domestic terrorist was able to take down the U.S. power grid. And then it's like, what would happen? You know, I try to keep things really realistic. So I read a lot of government documents that talked about this and, you know, congressional hearings about it and things like that. And to some extent that right will help you write the book. Because certain things would happen. And I think my background is in economics, so I kind of like all those moving parts, you know, trying to figure out how all these moving parts would fit together and affect the world. And then I write a big outline, typically, and then work on the book from that outline. I don't always necessarily follow the outline, because like I said, sometimes characters surprise me and they take a left turn when I had plan for him to take a right turn, but I generally follow that and, you know, get a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's the hardest part of writing a book for me is figuring out a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then I can usually fill it all in.
Yeah, that's interesting for the author to say that his own characters surprise him, and that's just part of the creative process, which is interesting to ponder on a little bit. And by the way, one thing I think that, you know, if you read the original Vince Flynn books, there's a lot of humor that he brings in there, and there's humor in the dialogue and so forth, and Mitch Rapp has a kind of that wry sense of humor, kind of a blunt sense of humor, you would say. But by gosh, it's not easy to write humor, but, you know, you bring the humor, and, you know, here I am laughing out loud, you know, a good handful of times throughout this newest book. But is that something you strive for, or is it just sort of something that happens when you're writing your way along?
I think a little bit of both. It definitely just happens. The question is, how much do you keep in there? You know, my books probably have quite a bit more humor than Vince's did. It was something I introduced. In fact, when I wrote The Survivor, I was trying to just make it really indistinguishable from a book that Vince would write, and I didn't really realize that I had put more humor in it. And it was George Godal, the guy who does the audiobook, who has to think about these things, that is the one that brought that to my attention, that he's like, there's a lot more funny stuff in this than before. But for me, it breaks the tension. And also, because of my background, my father was an FBI agent, the director of Interpol and stuff, I've known a lot of these people over the years. And most of them do have a dark sense of humor because their jobs are really hard. And, you know, whether they be military, FBI, or CIA, making jokes is a way to sort of break that tension for them. So I thought it was realistic that he and Scott Coleman and some of the others would have these weird senses of humor.
Right on. And you mentioned George Godal, and I'm not sure how you pronounce that name, but that guy is one heck of an audiobook reader, I have to say. I think he's got, you know, his own legion of fans, does he not, George Godal? What's it like to work with that guy?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's a legend. I mean, it was incredibly lucky to get him to voice Mitch Rapp, and people are absolutely rabid fans of his. And it's a really interesting take because it's kind of – a lot of people consume books now on audio. It wasn't a big thing when I started, you know, 20-odd years ago. But it's a little bit of a combination of the book. It's a between a book and a movie to some extent.
Yes.
Like, I write the book, and then everybody puts their – every reader puts their imprint on it, right?
Yes.
But – and in a movie, you don't get to imprint anything, really. I mean, there it is in glorious, you know, Technicolor. But with the audio book, it's somewhat George's and it's somewhat mine, which is kind of an interesting combination because sometimes I'll read them and think, oh, yeah, I never really thought that, about that character sounding that way or using those inflections. But I can see now how that really works.
Yeah, exactly. What a blessing George Godal is to this series. You know, I count myself a fan of his reading. I'm trying to. He read the whole Dune book like 30 years ago by himself. One character read the entire Dune, and somehow or another, like, I can't seem to find that anywhere. But that's one I'd like to dig up at some time with that new movie coming out. But I'll tell you what. Well, Kyle Mills, author of the latest Mitch Rapp installment, Enemy at the Gates, and before we let you totally go here and back to your leisurely life in Spain, maybe, you know, get a rope, go climb a rock here later. But you already said you're working on your next book. Can you give us any, you know, previews, tidbits? Where are you going next?
Yeah, you know, it just starts the minute, not even the minute after. It starts with the last chapter of Enemy at the Gates.
It seemed like there was some unresolved stuff going on. There's a few things hanging.
Yeah, they've still got that president out there that you know, he and Mitch have now really locked horns. So I've never done this before. But, you know, Vince obviously arced these stories over multiple books, and I've done the same. But kind of a new thing with the series that seemed to work here is kind of the – it's not really the last chapter. The second to last chapter of this book is the prologue of the next book, but it's written instead of a – from another character's standpoint, it's written from Mitch Rapp's standpoint. So it's his view on what happened with the, you know, at the end of the last book as opposed to the other character's point of view.
Good.
So it starts right away and then kind of tells the story of what happens after that.
Okay, good. I think for people to hear that, they'll feel, for the ones that may be concerned that there was a few threads left open-ended at the end of Enemy at the Gates, to know that they will be picked up again. And I probably, is it next year? I don't know if you have a goal you're searching for or a deadline, but you figure maybe around this time next year, you'll have a product?
Yeah, pretty much every time, middle of September.
Okay, right on. Well, I'll tell you what, Kyle Mills, what a joy to have a chance to visit with you and explore so many of these themes. As you know, you carry the torch for this iconic character that means so much to literally millions of people in America and even around the world. I just say from us out here in Colorado, a neighbor to you when you live in Wyoming, just north of us, may I just wish you all the best with your future endeavors, your future books, and you know, when that next one comes around, maybe I could give you a call out there in Spain, or maybe you're up in Jackson, and we'll review the next one.
I would love that. I hope we can make it happen.
Right on. Well, Kyle Mills, again, thank you so much for taking time for us here in Colorado, and all the best to you and your next productions. Okay, so thank you again, Kyle Mills.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay, Matt Dunn in for Randy Corcoran. And what? Hey, tell you what, folks, that Mitch rap, they sell that book by the millions, and that is in that genre. I think it's hard to find good thrillers or fun thrillers to read. There's just a handful of authors, I think, that do it really well. And by gosh, this guy's one of them. And how do you get lucky and go from a Vince Flynn to a Kyle Mills to keep Mitch Rapp alive? I mean, that's just a real fortunate thing. And, you know, a lot of us patriot types really enjoy studying that genre and, you know, learning and thinking about politics in those ways and geopolitics and current events and, you know, the agencies and all that and the issues involved. But at any rate, big thanks to Kyle Mills for being part of the program here today. And tell you what, we better take our break. And when we come back, I think we have some unfinished business about what went on in Arizona yesterday, Maricopa County. So let's pick that right up where we left off after hour one. And again, Matt Dunn for Randy Corcoran. Let's come right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.